Okay, I just want you to know that's very common, right? You're going to feel so much better by the time we're done today. We're learning about the 12 keys to high school success. It is perfect if you have a sixth grade child or up, although I've known people with kindergartners that were so afraid of high school that they attended my class, and that's great. The workbook is available online. I'm going to say it for people that are on the recording, okay? You go to tinyurl.com/12keys to success. And that's, I'm going to have a workbook like this one every time I do my presentations. And it's going to be really helpful if you do have the workbook and follow along. But I will tell you a little secret. I think I've underlined all the answers on my PowerPoint. So if you just write down what is underlined on the screen every time, you can fill in the workbook later, okay? I'm all about making it easier for you guys. All right, so let's talk about what happens to a homeschool mom every 28 days to a month, okay? This is where we have our meltdown, all right? I know I did every single month of school. Roughly once a month, I would wake up my husband crying. This fell right off. I can't, it's broken. If you want that. So, sorry, I don't know. There's nothing I can do. There you go. Okay, so every single time it would happen, I would get all panicky. I would wake my husband up. Okay. I would wake my husband up and start crying. Often it was about Latin, sometimes it would be math, but there was always something that would cause me incredible stress and thereby causing my husband incredible stress, right? So what I had to realize the first month of school was that the first key concept is you have to know that homeschooling is gonna work. You have to understand that when you feel like, yeah, but it's not going to work for me, right? It could work for other people, but it's not going to work for me. That's when you need to start realizing that homeschooling will work for you as well. So let's talk about how you know it's going to work, okay? Well, one way you're going to know is because it is the best learning environment. People, especially if they haven't homeschooled before, they'll say, what does homeschooling look like? Well, at my house, it looked like my child reading a book on my dog, right? Can I get an amen there? And, you know, it is safe and secure. The bullying is really between siblings, which is a different kind of bullying. And kids cannot learn if they're afraid. They can't. And so they learn more when they're homeschooling because they don't have that fear. They're afraid. Also, it's the best career preparation, because they can actually work on what they think they might want to do while they're homeschooling. And we call it delight-directed learning. Those are the things that make homeschooling fun. I'm going to talk about that more in a moment, but this is why it's the best career preparation. It's trial and error, getting to figure out what they like to do. It's also the best academic preparation, because all the studies of homeschoolers show that homeschoolers have higher test scores than public or private school kids. This is not because our kids are innately smarter. It's because they're with mom who actually, you know, makes them do the thing, okay? And that's what happens. All right. Now, I want you to write this down. I wanted to give you a couple of scriptures. These are the scriptures that it's based on. Psalm 139:13-16. That talks about how your child has been given to you, whether by birth or adoption. This was your child in your family for this reason. If God thought that somebody else was better for the job, he would have given it to the other person. Okay? You may feel unqualified, but this is you are the chosen person for this job. Philippians 4:13 says, you can do all things, even this horrible thing, even this Latin or calculus if you have to, you can do even that. And 1 Peter 4:8, I'd like to memorize this. It says that love covers a multitude of sins. We tend to think that that is just a saying from, I don't know, Ben Franklin, but it is in the Bible, okay? And what that tells us is that missteps will occur because we are human beings, but that when they do occur, it will be okay because the love that we have for our child is going to ensure success. So what I'd like you to write down is, my child has been given to me. I am capable. And when missteps occur, it will be okay. All right, so that's good. Let's talk about the second meltdown I would have. It usually happened in October when I started to realize, okay, I can homeschool, but I don't know what's gonna happen in the future. And I had only two children, but they were so different from one another. And my best friend had six little blonde girls all in a row, 18 months apart. And she said, all six of them are so different. And that's the way parenting goes. Your children are just different. And it's hard for us to know what the future is going to hold, all right? So quick quiz, which one of you has a teenager who has ever changed their mind? Raise your hand. Would you say it happened at breakfast, right? You know? You have this moving target. How can you possibly cope with children that are all so different and they're a moving target like little wiggly fish, right? So the answer is to always be prepared for anything, all right? So let's talk about what does that mean, okay? What it means is by providing a college prep education, no matter what happens, your kids will be prepared for anything. Now, I want to put your mind at ease really quickly. College prep does not mean calculus or Latin or violin. Okay, so, okay. But think about why would people do such a horrible thing as providing college prep, right? Well, if you have a child, you know they're going to college. You know that they're going to need college preparation. That seems pretty self-evident. So let's talk about the other kids, right? The non-college bound kids. So the thing is, they may change their mind, these wily creatures. I knew my best friend's son, he would bring home little stray engines the way others might bring home a little stray puppy. And she really thought that he was gonna be a mechanic, right? He was gonna do something with his hands. And then he turned 18 and changed his mind and said, Mom, I want to be an electrical engineer, which freaked her out, right? So if you have a child who has ever changed their mind, if you provide college prep education, again, does not mean calculus necessarily, then all of a sudden, no matter what happens, they will be prepared. And that college prep is going to save your bacon, because you will be ready no matter what they decide, right? All right, so here's what I want you to write down. You want to be prepared because situations change and because teenagers change their mind. Life would be easy if they didn't. So then you have to ask yourself, okay, I'm doing this college prep, I don't get it. How does that happen? Is there a pill I can take for that, you know? So no is the answer, there isn't. So key concept number three is to have a morning meeting. This is the one that I started to realize when I started to experience chaos in the home. I know I'm the only one who homeschools who has ever had chaos in the home, but perhaps you can learn something from this. Anyway, okay. The thing is that our job, our role, changes over time. You start out in the diaper phase, right? And you're the caretaker. They can't do things for themselves. You're the caretaker. And then you become the teacher. Here is how you hold the pencil. Here is how you multiply, right? And then this weird thing happens and you become a mentor. And then later still, you become a friend. You're at that awkward stage right now between teacher and mentor. And it feels really uncomfortable because what happens is you get to the place where you don't know the math anymore. and then you delegate to a video tutorial, and then you feel like a loser, right? It's like, I can't teach my child. I'm completely incapable. What am I going to do, right? Well, it's actually not a sign of failure at all. It's a sign of success. You've made that hurdle to being a mentor. And that's actually what you want your children to do. That's what successful adults need. They need to be able to learn for themselves. They need to be on the job, learn how to do it, go to college. They have to read the own. Nobody teaches in college. They hand you the book, right? You have to learn it yourself. So this is a good stage of life that you're in when you're a mentor. And the way to successfully navigate that is to have a morning meeting. So let's talk about that, okay? Once upon a time in the Bible, we read verses about how it's a really good thing to have a morning meeting with God, right? That is true, and it is a good model for us as homeschoolers as well. When things aren't getting done, when things are in chaos, the answer is to have a morning meeting, not just with you and God, but also with you and your children, okay? So as you become this project manager, you want to have a morning meeting. And what that means is you're trying to help them learn every day, okay? Now people are laughing because of that last line. You know what? Bad things happen to good homeschoolers. And even a good homeschool mom can occasionally have a child who is slow or cheats, right? So you're trying to make sure that if they cheat, it's a one-day event. Not a one-year event, not a six-month event. Oops, forgot math for a whole year, right? How do you prevent that from happening? And it's actually a morning meeting. So let me explain what that is, okay? A morning meeting is when you check in with each child for maybe 10, 15 minutes, okay? So even if you have a whole truckload of kids, it is still manageable. And then you want to check in with most subjects, not the ones they're going to do anyway, whether you tell them to do it or not. If they love piano, you don't need to check in on piano. They're just going to play the piano, okay? But you're touching in on the things they especially don't like. Maybe it's science or math, okay? And then you review problem areas, whether that is behavior or Latin, all right? And then you explain their assignments so that they know what is expected for that day, okay? Now I'm gonna give you a big tip on adulthood and college prep. We talked about what college prep isn't. What college prep is understanding vocabulary. Did you know, studies have shown, that if you know the vocabulary of any subject, you know 80% of that subject. You can get an 80% on the test just by memorizing the vocabulary. And so if you have a particularly difficult subject, let's say biology, and you go over your biology flashcards, or maybe it's Spanish, and you're looking at their vocabulary words they're supposed to know in Spanish, that alone can give them 80% on their test, okay? So then let's think about what that means for adults. It means if they go into college and they know how to study the vocabulary words, they're going to succeed in college. And if they know the vocabulary words on the job, they will succeed on the job, okay? So master vocabulary. All right, now right about this time would come December in my year, and I had the same December meltdown every single year. And that would be, we never get to the hard stuff. How do you get to the hard stuff? Because it was always the fun stuff. By the way, true story about social media, I have like 3 great pictures of my kids doing projects. And I just want you to know that's because they did 3 great projects in 4 years of high school, okay? And that's the truth about social media. All your friends that post all these things, they don't post what's really real. All right, so let's talk about how do you make sure that the hard stuff gets done? And that's the way you do that is you put the weak areas first. Now there's 2 ways that you put your weak areas first. We're gonna talk about each one, but I want you to think about what is your weak area? Okay, let's think about that. For some people, it's gonna be math. I'm not naming names. For some people, it might be English. For me, it was actually art because art is messy and I hate mess, right? So art was hard for me. Or think about yourself. Is your weak area your ability to schedule or your ability to do, okay? So you think about what is the weak area in your homeschool, and that's what I want you to write down. And as we're talking through this, I want you to think about how you can apply that, all right? We're going to pretend that anybody in this room might have the weak area of math, all right? It's probably not you. I know everybody loves math, but that's what we're going to do. Okay, so here's how you manage your weak area. You put your weak area first in terms of your time, okay? How do you put your weak area first? How do you do math first in terms of your time? Well, it means it's your first thing that you do each day. Now listen up, all you morning people. That does not mean 5 in the morning. No, no. This is when your child is conscious and functional, okay? I like to think about it as my first caffeinated subject of the day, right? I've had breakfast, I'm on my second cup of coffee, right? It's also your priority every single day, right? If you hate math, the temptation is, you know, maybe not today. It's just for one day, you say. And then the next day you say it's just one day, and then the next day you say it's just one day. So math is the day, you do it every single day. And you never, ever, ever miss a day, okay? Now, so in real life, the reason I mentioned this in December when I had this particular meltdown was because every December we would do a homeschool light, right? I had birthdays, we had Christmas, Thanksgiving just happened. It's like in my home we could either have Christmas or we could homeschool. And then, so what I did was we would have homeschooling light for the entire month of December. We never skimped on their weak areas, right? So it was like we would do homeschooling for maybe, I'm talking high school, maybe 4 hours a day, maybe 3, possibly 4 hours a day in high school in December, because that's the only way I could cope, and we survive. Okay, so yay us. All right, so this is how you put it first in terms of your time. So I have a quick quiz, right? Which one is more important? Doing your weak area today or free zoo tickets? Or for some people, like me, free Super Bowl tickets. Which one is more important? Come on, guys. Come on. The weak area, okay? Now, I want you to carefully notice that this was a trick question. Because you could literally go to the Super Bowl and do math, right? Trick question. All right, so, but you would do the math first and then watch the Super Bowl. Unless, I don't know, you're in a different time zone and you recorded it. That's fine. Okay. All right, now let's talk about the other way that you put your weak areas first. This is appropriate for today. You put your weak areas first in terms of your money. I am super glad that you are here before you have spent all of your curriculum budget. really, truly, let's say math is your weak area, you buy your math curriculum first, right? Everything else is gonna take care of itself, but if you don't buy the top shelf, easy to use, the one that appeals to you and your children, it is not gonna happen. If you get something that was, you know, used from, you know, the public school, it's probably not gonna happen, so you don't wanna do that. So you spend your curriculum dollars first on your weak area. Again, you know, we're talking about December, my December meltdown. One of the things I realized every December is that my children's strong areas were taken care of by Christmas presents, right? When they love piano, you buy them piano music. When they love art, you buy them art supplies. When they love math, you buy hands-on math games. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I'm just saying it didn't happen to me, okay? And so you want to be thinking about that's where you put your first money. You also spend more money on your weak area. The temptation is to put it aside and say, you know what, I just hate math. This one's fine, you know? And that's how you're gonna pass on that, like it's a communicable disease, this hating math disease, right? You don't wanna do that. Now, this is tricky, so listen closely. Occasionally, curriculum doesn't work.
and it goes to the back of the closet, right? In your weak area, in your weak area alone, it is okay for you to re-spend money on your weak area. If math is not working by October, November, you throw it out the window, you get another one that works, okay? Now, I'm not saying you go out and you buy, I don't know, 58 different kinds of art lessons for your child. This is not the expense we're talking about. But if it's something like math or science and it is not working by within 2 months, you really want to replace that. If you let it go all year, all you're doing is training your child to be the subject, which is something we're trying to avoid. Okay. All right. Make sure you are willing to reinvest. Okay. Now, we're talking about how I would have this monthly meltdown, right? Every January, my monthly meltdown was faced with Christmas presents, right? Because you have these Christmas presents, they all have bells and whistles. They all plug in or have a battery, and they're constantly distracting, right? So that was my big problem, was the constant distraction. So how do you make sure that that doesn't interfere with your homeschooling is by setting logical boundaries, all right? This is the only way to successfully make it through January when they get the new whatever it is. I don't even know the new things anymore because my kids are now 30. Okay, so here's what you want to do. You want to think about setting logical technology boundaries. This is going to be a hard discussion for us to have. Did you know that pediatricians recommend that children have 2 hours of technology per day through the age 18? 2 hours per day. Did you further know that that includes school? Right? That's hard. 2 hours per day is your goal. The more your child loves to play on the computer, the more you don't want to do school on the computer so that they can use that 2 hours to play. All right? So, in order to do that, you have to set technology boundaries with your child, okay? So if, let's say math is your weak area, I would encourage you to try not to have a lot of online classes, but perhaps have a video tutorial that takes 15 minutes instead of an hour every day, instead of watching a screen every day, okay? Now, a lot of research shows that kids learn better with an actual textbook, pencil, and paper. Who knew, right? And then we have the schools that are constantly telling us, you know what, we need to increase our technology budget. We need an iPad or a computer in front of every single child. And then they complain to us about evidence-based curriculum. And I'm like, evidence-based? This is not evidence-based. This is money-based. You just love the money. You know, so technology and education is not evidence-based. What is evidence-based is actual books, actual pencils, actual paper, all right? So that should affect your curriculum choices. Now, this is the hardest one yet, all right? We have to set boundaries on our own personal technology use, which is hilarious because this is usually the part in the slides show where somebody picks up their phone and takes a picture of the slide to help them remember. All right, so this is difficult. The best lesson I learned was from my daughter-in-law, the mother of my two-year-old son, and she said what she does is she takes her cell phone, she turns on the ringer, but she puts it in her phone into the drawer in the kitchen. So if somebody called her on the phone, she would hear it, but it's out of sight, so she doesn't see the vibrates or the flashing or any of that stuff. And I just think that's a great idea for us as well, because people could reach you. It's just that, you know, not all the time, not 24/7. All right, so with that in mind, now we gotta write this one down. Darn, I will set logical boundaries on my own technology use. Let's think this through for a moment. If you're constantly on Pinterest looking for great craft ideas, homeschooling is not going to happen. If you are always searching for the best curriculum reviews on Amazon, homeschooling is not going to happen. If you are posting pictures constantly on Facebook and Instagram, homeschooling is not going to happen. One picture that you have posted on Instagram is not equivalent to having hours of time one-on-one with your child, which results in a quality education, okay? Now that was really hard, and I'm the first one to admit, I love my technology, and I am on social media, you can find me all over. However, I also delegate that to other people who have logical technology boundaries as well, okay? All right, so let's think about what happens next. Key concept number 6 happened to me in February, because February is the month when all teachers in all of the entire globe feel burned out. And so when it happens to you, you know, you've heard it here first, okay? This is what happens to all teachers in February, possibly Northern Hemisphere, maybe not Southern Hemisphere. It is hard to homeschool in February. I think it was my third year through that I started to realize how bad February was, and I would look at the public school schedule and schedule my homeschool for the same days that they did, because that would force me to take a break. Mm-hmm. Because they know it, they schedule entire breaks for that midwinter break. This is why, it's because we're all dying here, right? So the answer for homeschooling though is to include delight-directed learning. Delight-directed learning makes your life better. It makes your children's lives better. So let's talk about how we include that, okay? Delight-directed learning, for those of you who haven't heard of it before, it is sometimes called specialization. Colleges call it passion. Some homeschoolers call it self-study, the love of learning, that sort of thing. Now, what you do when you have delight-directed learning, maybe it's piano or basketball or photography or economics, weird story, I have a child who loves economics. He did not genetically get that from me. I have no idea where that came from. All right, so when they're doing this, it makes less work for you, because if they love something, you're not writing a test. You're not correcting a test. You're not finding curriculum. You're not buying curriculum. It just happens, right? But also the children benefit, because it makes homeschooling more fun. My children literally thought that school was 4 hours a day. If you ask them now, they'd probably say, no, yeah, we only took about 4 or 5 hours. And that is true. But the rest of the day was their delight-directed learning. And that's when we included things like all of that economic study and all of their chess study and their swim team and their piano playing and the things that they did for fun. Even when I would sign them up for dumb classes in a group, right? That was just things that they did for fun. The other thing is that colleges and employers love it, because it makes more unique students who have had more unique experiences. It can really help them to get a job when they have something that they're really crazy about. Okay, so delight-directed learning, very important. All right, now assuming that I made it through February, which was not always guaranteed, okay, I would have a March meltdown. My March meltdown was by being overwhelmed, because that's when you have that little glimmer that the end of the year is coming, and you start planning for the coming year, right? So what actually happens in the mind of a homeschool parent then is you have the weight of this year and the weight of next year, and you're dying. The load is crushing, okay? So how do you make it through this year and plan for next year to be a better year, all right? And that's by planning margin in your day. Now margin is in a book. Margin is the white space, right? It has the giant white space around the outside. Margin is also the amount of white space between the lines, right? Between each sentence. So margin in a book is the white space in the book. Margin in your life is unplanned white space in your life, okay? Now, when I give this talk, at the end of the day, mom has just bought 18 hours of curriculum, and there are not 18 hours of homeschooling available to us, right? And that's a challenge, right? So you have not yet bought all your curriculum. And I want you to be thinking about, okay, let's pretend that I can only homeschool for 8 hours a day without going crazy, right? And then you only buy 8 hours worth of curriculum, not say 18. Let's just go with that. Now, we need unplanned free time in our life. What happens if we don't get that? Okay, I put here sanity. That's actually not the big deal. The big deal is you get sick, you get physically ill. I'm actually a nurse by training, and the stress of having too much in your life will put you in the hospital. It may not be this year, but in coming years. So as a nurse, I'm telling you, don't do that to yourself. It is not healthy, okay? But children need free time to learn. You know, there's a lot of research about having younger children with unstructured free time and how incredibly important that is. I think the same thing is true for teenagers, okay? So you plan for some free time for your own sanity. All right, now we're gonna talk about the hard part of planning margin. In order to have margin, you have to say no to many wonderful things. One of the big problems with our life right now is that there's too much good stuff to choose from. When you go looking through that vendor hall and it's like half of it, you're just, oh, I've got to use it. That's incredible. It looks wonderful. If you bought all that curriculum, you would end up in the hospital, and we don't want to do that. So we're going to have to say no to many good things. Now, one of the difficulties, though, is you also have to say no in your personal life, right? Because the Proverbs 31 woman, she did not all do that at the same time she was homeschooling. That was her lifetime achievement award, okay? And you can't do everything that the Proverbs 31 woman did every single year of homeschooling. So much of it you need to put aside. That's for a different season of life. So for example, I did not homeschool when I had this job, right? Now that I have this job, I am not homeschooling, but I could not have done them at the same time. I know people do, but I personally could not do that. So what does it actually mean? It means sometimes you're gonna have to say, no, I cannot take meals to 8 women today, right? I cannot volunteer for that church group. I cannot attend this one thing. There's things you're gonna have to say no to, and it's really hard. Okay, you know, sometimes I see people that are doing so much, not just curriculum, and you know who you are, you're the super intense people. When I say Latin and rhetoric, you know, we wink, right? The problem is we're not trying to raise workaholics. We are trying to raise balanced adults who will come home from work and spend time with their children. And if you're training them to work 12 hours a day at school, you're training them to be a workaholic. And yes, it is true, God wants us to work. There is lots of scripture on work. But did you know there's more scripture on rest? Somebody actually did the research for me. I think she told me it was 3 times as many verses on rest than work. So yes, we are called to work, but we're also called to rest. We have to have balance. Okay, I'm done lecturing. All right, so the next key concept is to plan high school courses, because this was the time of year when I started thinking about what next year would bring, and I realized I had no clue, right? But when you're going hiking, you need to have the 10 essentials, right, to map some gear. Same thing is true with high school, right? You want to be thinking, okay, what is essential? What do I need to have for planning high school courses? And we're going to talk about that. You're going to fill in all those little spots in your workbook in a minute. But I want to say something to you. This is really important. There are some of you who are going to be experiencing a very difficult time. And we don't know which one of you that's going to be. Bad things can happen to good homeschoolers. Death, divorce, hospitalization. Somebody has a horrible disease that spends time in the hospital. It's very difficult. So as we're going through these planning high school courses, that's why I want you to think about starting strong when your child is in ninth grade. And then if it is you who is being tested, first of all, you can always come to me. You and I can talk because I never judge, and I totally understand that bad things can happen to really wonderful people, and it's not always your fault, okay? But if to prevent that from happening to you, you start strong in ninth grade, you plan all the courses that you can in ninth grade. And if you cannot plan high school courses because at some point in the future you faced a horrible, horrible difficulty, you're trying to put in literacy first, reading and writing, even if it's journaling from the hospital bed and reading real books that are fun, Laura Ingalls Wilder is great. You'd love to get math done, if at all possible, because it's really hard to catch up on math, but you can catch up on every other thing, okay? So for those of you who may have difficulty in the future, just write that down and think of me, okay? And I'm sorry, and I've been praying for you in advance. All right, so let's talk about planning high school courses. All right, these are the core classes that you want to cover every year, all right? To be college prep or even just to graduate from high school, you want to have your child get 4 years of English. 4 years of English. Now you'll notice how it does not say British literature or literary analysis or 12 page research papers in the MLA format. Okay, this is reading and writing at your child's level. Okay, you need to have 4 years of math. Notice how it does not say calculus, right? Math at their level. Oh, please, Lord, make it so I want to get through one book per year. That would be great. If not, come to my booth, we'll talk about it. But you're really trying to get one math book per year, per child, at their level. The next is social studies. You want to see American history, world history, economics, and government. Sometimes economics is only a half a credit, and sometimes government is only a half a credit. And that's why it's either 3 or 4 years, okay? Now for science, this is very shocking. For science, you want to see 3 years of science, and at least one of those is a lab. If you have a science guy, science girl, keep going. More science, better, right? More labs, better. I know what you're thinking, though. You're thinking, what is a lab science? And I have the answer for you. Your federal government has spent a lot of money trying to decide what is a lab science in high school. They had a committee. They had a subcommittee. There have been reports. Your hard work, your tax dollars has paid for the study that has shown that they have no idea, right? They have absolutely no idea. Some schools are online, some they dissect little critters, some they just show pictures of dissecting little critters. There is no definition. So I'm gonna give you my interpretation of this analysis by the federal government, okay? If you have bought lab equipment, and generally speaking used it, probably not all, right? You're good, you're golden, call it a lab science. Okay. All right. So the next thing you have to think about is the classes that go beyond the core. Again, if nobody's in the hospital, I want you to try to do these things. If somebody is in the hospital, do not give these things a second thought. Okay. So you want to include a foreign language, right? The problem is, some colleges want 2 years, some want 3, some want 4. How do you know? You don't know. The kid's constantly changing, right? So if you start a foreign language when they're freshmen, you'll know by the time they're a junior or senior where they're gonna go to college, probably where what they might want to do. Oh, they're definitely college bound and it looks like Harvard, whatever. And then you'll know how much you need to do. So if you start strong, you will be prepared for anything. Okay, PE, you wanna have 2 years of PE. Now, here's the thing, PE includes anything that breaks a sweat, right? Your children go out to play, you have a trampoline, they're playing basketball, it all counts. They go out, they play with their friends, they play with their dad, it all counts. Anything that they do that is physically active in any way, That all counts for their PE. The next thing you want to do is to have 1 year of fine art. I was so relieved. I've already confessed art is so messy, right? I was so relieved there was only 1 year of fine art. And I solved it in the tidiest of ways, by the way. We took piano lessons. Could not get tidier than that. Although there are a lot of piano books around. But I mean, you can pick them up, right? That's just all it's in. And there's no, like, mud. Okay, so for the fine arts. Now, here's the thing. There are people who are not at all like me. And they really, really like the fine arts, right? So you can have multiple fine arts credits. I was not homeschooled. I went to public high school. In my public high school, my friends would do choir and band and orchestra every single year. Every year, they would have 3 credits of music alone every single year for 4 years, right? I had one friend, she was in choir, band, orchestra, and took jewelry making. Every single year, she had 4 credits of fine art. So I'm just saying, knock yourself out. It wasn't me, but that's okay. I don't judge if you like the fine arts. Okay. All right, the next thing is electives. Now, this is really important because people look at that and they think I'm telling them to have 24 electives, and that is not what I am saying. You have to read the sentence very carefully, all right? I'm trying to get your child to have 24 credits. So you have as many electives as you need in order to get those 24 credits, all right? There are actually 3 sources of credits. I think I still have time to tell you what those are. The 3 sources of electives are what is required by your state law. I can't remember exactly your state law, but I think state history is required. State history? Nobody knows. Okay, sometimes it's state history, sometimes it's technology. I'm from Washington. We're required to teach occupational education, which is super awesome because you wait until they're motivated by money and get a job, right? And then you count the hours on the job. Usually somebody else counts it for you because they pay by the hour. Works out great. Okay. So you're looking at what's state law, and then you're looking at what parents require. And that varies, right? I required 4 years of Bible. Not everybody does. It might be home ec or auto mechanics or technology or logic. There's a lot of things that you can require. Now, again, this all comes back to that balance thing. If you personally require 8 credits and they're already doing all of their other core classes, you have no margin, right? So you're going to have to make some hard decisions. You're going to have to let go of some really good subjects in order to successfully educate your children. Okay. And then the third source of electives, we've already talked about, that's the delight-directed learning. That's when they're constantly playing the piano and picking up the guitar, and then they go play basketball with their friends, and you know you have a lot of those credits naturally. Okay? So, yes?
Real quick, can you translate accredited to hours?
Yeah. Yeah, so, and we'll talk about that in the next class for a long time, okay? But one credit is between 120 to 180 hours. Okay, but it's even easier than that. One credit means 1 hour a day. A half a credit means a half an hour per day. Okay? All right, good. All right, so now that gets us to pretty much where we are right now. We're choosing curriculum wisely. The problem is, this is the time of year when your friends are making their choices. And have you noticed the curriculum is always greener on the other side of the fence, you know? And so that's difficult. And also, people are telling you this is the best one, right? You'll have a reviewer saying this is the top review, or you'll have your best friend who says, but this is the only one, right? And that's not the case, because actually it's not about what's top rated. It's about what's the best fit for your child, and you are the only one qualified to make that decision, okay? So the best curriculum is not perfect. The best curriculum is the perfect fit. Let's talk about math for a moment. Let's suppose there was a top-rated curriculum. My nephew teaches math in a public high school. He teaches calculus, and one time he told me that Saxon was by far the best curriculum, which at the time made me want to throw up. Okay, but that's okay. That may be the top rated, but if your child doesn't learn the way that that
curriculum teaches, and they only learn 75%, and the rest of it is just like, foo, right? Let's suppose you have a less rigorous curriculum that is taught in the way that your child understands, and they get 100% of it, because you make them do the whole problem, right? Because moms are like that. And all of a sudden, they've learned more from a curriculum that maybe isn't rated as highly, and they would learn less with a curriculum that didn't fit that has a higher rating. So you can see why it's important for you to find just the right fit. In case you're wondering how the story ended up, I literally forbid my son from using Saxon. And then when he was in high school and I needed a video tutorial and that was the one that fit and he used it, and I can't tell you how shocked I was. He loved it. It's like, what is wrong with you? He said there was no pictures on the page. It didn't interfere with the numbers. It's like, I can't even. So I'm just saying, there are people that actually like that, and don't judge your child for liking something different. You're not learning it, they're learning it, right? Okay. Now the next thing about choosing curriculum is you're trying to make it challenging, but not overwhelming. Whether your child is remedial or gifted or smack dab in the middle of the bell-shaped curve, you're trying to keep it always challenging and never overwhelming, which means they should be able to do it and they should be successful. I believe one of the biggest problems that public education has is that they did not learn this. They just keep pushing kids along, and then they get a B in math, and then the next year they get a C in math, and the next year they get a D in math, and then they don't know what's happening anymore, right? But we can make sure that that doesn't happen by keeping them always at that challenge spot. You want to keep them at their level in all subjects all the time. Now, it's not as hard as you think, because you kind of look at each subject individually. Again, we're not like a public or private school where they just like, all eighth graders go over here, you know, all ninth graders go over here. So we can actually do that. Now, if you do have a child that is a struggling learner in some way, let us pretend that they have dyslexia, for example. You can actually have them learn English just that 1 to 2 hours a day, and all of the other subjects they can do without English. They can do without their dyslexia, because they can learn history and science and all those other subjects without interfacing with their weak area. It's that constant negative feedback that's very difficult for kids that have a problem area. And if you can keep it to a contained 1 to 2 hours a day, it's easier. The other thing I want to encourage you is to use curriculum that is intended for homeschoolers. This is especially important for people that have come out of a school system to learn. You see, the thing is, a homeschool curriculum assumes you don't know calculus, and it assumes you don't know Latin, and that's why it's successful. But if you use a public school curriculum, it assumes that the teacher was trained in that whatever, French, you know, oh no. And you don't want that. So you want to buy a curriculum that is intended for homeschoolers. The next big tip is that every year some incredible new opportunities come up, right? But what I would encourage you to do is to try to use the tried and true curriculum rather than the latest and greatest, because we can just keep following down little rat holes of latest and greatest, and that doesn't necessarily mean that it's true. Did you know that if you picked up the last version, the last edition of Exploring Creation with Biology, that my children actually learned with that version, and they went to college and did very well in sciences? It is effective. It is the last edition. I don't even know if they have color pictures, but boy, it was effective. So you can do that. That last one, the more difficult your budget is, the more you focus on tried and true, because you really can get those last year's editions much cheaper. Okay, right about this time, I would be getting into June. And June was when I would start to schedule out my coming year, and that's when I realized how little I understood about anything, right? Because I would come face to face with, how do I even make a transcript? Or I have no idea what tests to take. And people are talking about things like PSATs, and I did not know what they were. Thankfully, you're here, and I'm teaching on the PSAT later today, okay? So this was the month when I needed to realize I had to be the guidance counselor and not be freaked out, okay? We talked at the very, very beginning who was afraid, and we all agreed we're pretty much afraid, right? So the problem is that it is the fear of things about high school that can get in the way the most. And my job is to take away the fear of things like transcripts and tests, etc. As soon as I can remove that fear, you're gonna be able to, you know, do what you're called to do and not live in panic, right? So let's talk about how to be the guidance counselor. You need to not be terrified, okay? So number one, you want to maintain the records that are needed for college and career. Now this is difficult. I need you to understand, I get phone calls from 28-year-old men who need their high school transcript. I can't help them, I did not homeschool them, right? If your child doesn't need your transcript this year, they don't need it for this job, that college, they may need it for the next one, okay? Now let's think about of all the people we know, how many career changes have those people made? I think I read something like 7 was the average number of career changes, right? We changed careers, I changed careers. I was a nurse, and then I was a mom, and then I was a homeschool mom, and now I have a small business. I've changed my careers many times. At any point, your child could change their mind and end up needing some records. One young man called me, 28 years old, he wanted to get a job in China. He was gonna be a missionary, you know, and he had to have a job in China, an actual job. And they wouldn't hire him unless they had course descriptions from his high school. And, you know, mom had not homeschooled for 10 years at that point, right? And that's a hard place to be. Okay, so we want to maintain the high school records that are needed because we are the high school, right? It's not super scary. I'm going to show you how next time we talk. But, all right, the next thing you want to do is you want to keep an academic calendar of dates and tests. Now, I'll bet you, though, if I said to you, what are you doing next Wednesday, you could probably find out, right? And if I said, what is April 15th, you probably knew, right? And you are totally capable of keeping a calendar. It's right there on your phone, right? We can totally do this. The next thing you want to do is to learn what colleges want and be the project manager of college admission. When teens are 18 years old, it's really hard to tell them anything. And only moms of older teenagers really understand how true that statement is. Okay, so some of us are nodding. The difficulty, though, is if you let them sink or swim with college admission, it means, $100,000 difference in scholarships, right? Very few of us have that kind of cash that we can just waste on teenagers' attitudes, right? So you want to be, although I did have one of my gold Kelly members, first thing she said to me is, don't talk to me about scholarships, we don't need scholarships, so, right? But it's okay because she said it first, I've not said the word since then. Okay, so you want to learn what colleges want, and then you want to be the mentor, not the teacher, not the doer, but the mentor of making sure that that process happens, okay? Now, just a quick reminder, we are love givers of our children, not just caregivers, not just college coaches who get parents put in prison. We actually love our children. We want them to succeed. We want them to be successful, thriving adults. So when I talk about being the project manager, you can totally do that. You are motivated for the success of your children. Okay, the next thing is you need to invest in yourself, right? This is the time of year where we are right now as we're thinking about, I'm not sure I can do this next year. This was a really hard year. How am I going to move forward? Well, we need to adapt, okay? Now, the way anybody gets better at their job is by investing in themselves, right? They take continuing education classes. All right, so now let's think about this for a moment. If I told you that a continuing education class was attending a homeschool conference, raise your hand if you just earned 1 point. Okay. What if I said continuing education was taking a class at a convention? Give yourself another point. Okay? So you're already doing this. This is great. So I want you to embrace your job, right? You actually did choose this. I'm not lying, all right? There are other choices, none of which are as good as what you're doing, but you could do other things, but you want to embrace this, and because this is your job, you want to take continuing education classes, you want to attend homeschool conventions, kudos to you, and support group meetings, okay? I also want you to think every year when you're buying your curriculum, I want you to think about buying something that's going to make you a better homeschool parent, okay? Our tendency is to get something that we already know, okay? Like, I am so good at teaching math, I'm going to get a book on teaching math because I'm so good at teaching math, right? That's not going to help you. You already know that stuff. What I want you to do is to identify what you're not good at and then buy something that's going to make you a better teacher for that one thing, okay? So for example, if you're terrible with scheduling, I want you to get something that's going to help you schedule, all right? Now, I got to hurry up. The next key concept, number 12, is to understand your goals for each year. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to run through these kind of quickly. I want you to write down the underlined portion for each year that we're going to be talking about. And if that is your child, then I want you to write down whatever details are important to you, whatever you didn't know. Okay? So let's talk about your one goal for each year. In middle school, your goal is to either review something that they did not get or preview something from high school. Right? So if they're behind in math, you can do a math review, you can keep doing math 7 and math 8, and you don't need to go right into pre-algebra, okay? But if they are behind in math, but they're not behind in other things, you can actually have them go into a high school class for foreign language or for biology, and you can put that on their high school transcript. So it's okay to be either way. During middle school, your job is to learn more about high school. Again, they're in middle school. Your time is done for learning about middle school. You're trying to move forward and not be afraid of what's coming next and practice record keeping. Now, the goal for freshman year is to just think about college. Ask yourself, could they ever change their mind about something other than breakfast, right? And so during freshman year, you spend time learning about high school. And you start a reading list and you make your transcript. The next class that we're going to be teaching is about making a transcript. During sophomore year, your goal is to plan for college. Just kind of assume that it might happen, just in case it might happen. So there's two important things about that. Number one is you have them take the PSAT just for fun. That gives them the opportunity to fill in the bubble test among 500 of total strangers, which is kind of a weird thing to do, you know? So it gives them a little practice with that. Second thing is to start a foreign language. And you also have to make your transcript every year. The goal of junior year is to actually find a college or career. You can't actually find a career when your child is a junior. They probably don't even know what they want to do when your child is a junior, so there's a process you go through to find a college, and here's how. You take the PSAT in the fall, you attend college fairs in the fall, you go on college visits in the spring. You take the SAT or the ACT in the spring. I'd like you to take it twice, please, same test, 2 times. You make your transcript, so it's all ready to go. By the end of junior year, you choose 4 to 8 colleges where you're going to apply. And the reason you do that in junior year is because sometimes they actually want you to apply during summer before senior year even happens. Scary stuff, right? So we tend to think that, I don't know, signing up for college is like signing up for co-op, you know, a couple months early and you're good to go. It's not the case. It's a whole year early, okay? So senior year, your goal is to apply for college or career. You cannot apply for a career in the fall. You have to actually finish. In fact, if you did apply for a career in the fall, your child may balk and not want to do school for the rest of the year. So I don't actually recommend that, okay? So what I recommend is that you apply for college in the fall. You see what the financial aid is that they're gonna offer you, and you make a financially based decision. Is it cheaper to go to college to go on to a career, and it actually can be. Okay, so you start the applications in September. You complete the FAFSA for need-based scholarships October 1st. You make the final college decision in the spring, and then they can plan on whether they want to get a job or not. What you're trying to avoid is a senior who all of their friends are going to college, and all of a sudden at the last minute they say, "Ben, I want to go to college too," and you're like, "But you didn't tell me." So this will help you to avoid that. And then you plan for graduation and diploma. Okay, so let's talk about continuing education in 45 seconds or less, okay? You could eat chocolate and drink coffee, which is what I always recommend, or do research or talk to your friends, but they may not know any more than you do, okay? Or you could get the high school solution. And on the last page of your workbook, you will see information on the high school solution. But I would encourage you on your workbook to just write down the coupon code. And then if you want to get the high school solution, you will get $100 off with the promo code HSS97. By the way, that is case sensitive, little h, little s, little s, 97, okay? So I would say I had lots of time for question and answer, but I'm a talker, so I don't even have 15 seconds, I'm sorry. But if you come to my booth, okay, that's what I'll tell you. Where's my booth? My booth, if you go into the vendor hall and turn right, you'll see me. I'm in booth 503. For everybody that is here, if you come to my booth, I'll give you this postcard. It has instructions to download a free book, How to Be a Better Home Educator. It will help you no matter how old your child is. And it will go into detail about that morning meeting that we talked about. Okay, free book at my booth, 503. Turn right and get into the curriculum. Thanks, guys.